It just dawned on me.
This is great, by the way. This is awesome.
Because we've had two calls from Iserbots. We've never taken Iserbot calls. Like, not like that. Like, we've had people that will stick by Iserbot, but not with the blind loyalty.
So what changed?
So Paul said we're getting a little crazy on today's show.
Well, yeah, and Kang's not here either to further tell us that this is corroborated as fact. But you know, I have been on the show for almost 20 years, and because it's the Carson Anderson program, for my last name's Anderson. But it's been nearly 20 years. Doug and I have done the show. I don't think we've taken 5 calls during this entire tenure of Steve Iserman that have been anywhere near what we just heard in the previous two. And it dawned on me that the reason that we're getting the Iserbot calls is that for the previous 4 or 5 years, Kenny Cott was working the phones.
Yep. Yep.
And Kenny, a great hockey mind, and we miss Kenny every day. But I think that's and I'm not faulting Paul.
No, blame
today.
Paul.
No, I'm blame not blaming. I love to hear it because I'm like, well, this is new. This is a new take. Because Paul's got the mind of, well, this is going to be interesting, and puts him on. I can't confirm that that's what's happened.
That's been full justification. Yeah. This will be interesting as soon as he
Kenny
hangs
was
up.
Not going to allow Iserbot calls to devolve the show.
Right?
Which is incredible.
At least for both of those. After Paul hung up, he looks over at me and says, this is going to be a good one.
Right?
Because the odds are zero that you wouldn't have gotten those calls. I mean, we've seen the evidence today that you will get the calls. You guys have talked about this previously.
Oh, we have.
Sometimes when a guy calls in and says something really ridiculous, you got to say, hold on, sir, and they'll get to you.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh, 100%. Yeah.
But Kenny didn't even allow them past go. That's tremendous.
Yeah. But nonetheless, we've taken a couple of those, and hopefully we don't take any more of them because I think they're absolutely ridiculous. They have the unconditional. My football coach when I was a senior in high school, want your unconditional loyalty. And the examples he gave were, if you're in school and someone says, coach used to call me Andy because last name Anderson. This guy Anderson, Andy, he's pretty slow. You say, no, Andy's pretty fast. I'm thinking to myself, no, I'm pretty slow. I don't know what you're talking about.
What sport?
Football.
There you go.
But that was one of the examples that he would give when he would talk. He gave us a speech of unconditional loyalty that we should have as teammates towards each other, which I get, you know, that there's a point, but fans aren't part of Steve Eisenman's team. You're a fan of the Detroit Red Wings, and I guess you're a fan of Steve Eisenman, but if you're given that kind of unconditional loyalty, I don't know what to tell you, man. I think that's just that goes a little bit beyond as another year passes and it's another failure.
In 2050, he'll still be owed more time to turn it around.
I'm still I like Steve Eisenman, but I'm surprised he still has the job as the general manager of this team. I'm curious what's next. Apparently, it is a fourth team in the mix now. The Dallas Stars on the precious list of Dylan Larkin. We'll see if they're able to consummate a deal. Does it facilitate, again, a third team? Does this offer up interesting pathways? And it should, because it's another team. But I don't know if it's going to get it done. I hope it does get done, just for the sake of let's move on. But we'll find out when and if that time comes. Let's shift to the Tigers. We've done a lot with the Red Wings. Well, we'll take one more call on the Red Wings, I guess. Steve in Northville. Steve, you got the last word on the Wings. What's going on?
Yeah, I'll make this quick, guys. So the bottom line is, first of all, Gator's the smartest guy in the room right now. And here's why. Because I think if there's genuine honesty behind the scenes, of course, between Larkin and Iserman, and they are able to air some dirty laundry between each other and work something out, if we were able to get Robertson and convince Larkin to stay, in the end, we're a much better team. I know that's a very much a long shot, but and this was really ugly, and I love the winged wheel, but we do have to get better. We're embarrassing the franchise at this point in time.
Yeah, and I mean, would you give up 4 first round picks to sign Jason Robertson to an offer sheet?
It depends on how the guys are doing in Grand Rapids. To be honest, I'm not astute enough to know that, but that's a lot. I mean, 4 is a heavy lift.
Yeah, and I suppose you could, and thanks for the call, Steve. I suppose you could break it up, give up a couple. I mean, to work out something that Dallas would accept, whether it's a combination of draft picks and prospects, you know, players that were first round picks. Could you give up two first round picks and Nate Danielson, Axel Sandy Pelica, something like that? Does that work out? Maybe. I don't know, but I'm just asking if there's a trade that can be made that doesn't include Dylan Larkin to acquire Jason Robertson, so that you can go back to Dylan and say, "Look, we just got Robertson. Let's work things out behind the scenes, and then we could talk together in unison and move forward." Because I'm telling you, a team that's added to the mix like they have already in the offseason, not that these are great additions to this team, but I think they're additions that are necessary when you bring in Arvidsson and Kolasar. Those are welcome additions.
They're helpful.
Yeah. But if you add Jason Robertson to the mix, that's massive, and particularly if you're able to hang on to Dylan Larkin, if you convince Dylan Larkin to stay. Because you can make all that work with salary. The Red Wings have a lot of money under the cap. They can make this work. And I really like a team that has Jason Robertson and Dylan Larkin on it with these other additions. I think that team looks a lot better. It gives a little bit of a longer runway with some of these younger players that show that they can get here quicker. I think that's a playoff team.
Well, there's no doubt about it, but I get the sense that you're past the point of no return. You've reached the point of, if we're talking about divorce paperwork, irreconcilable differences. Are you at the place of irreconcilable differences? Well, the first thing you got to do is lock those two guys in a room, throw away the key, and tell them to figure it out. That's the first thing that needs to happen if you are going to bridge that gap in any way, shape, or form. But when you're hearing that they haven't spoken in months and that they're talking through intermediaries and agents and so on and so forth, I don't think this is just on Dylan Larkin's side. I mean, I really think bridges have been charred here.
Well, they may have been, and I don't doubt that. In fact, I think you're probably right on that. It's just, again, it's a sliver of hope that I can hold out that that's what I would like to see. I think it's like a 5% chance that happens. Doug is more of the opinion that he doesn't think Larkin's going to get traded because he doesn't think Yzerman is going to get fair value. So he's going to have to come to training camp and stay with the Red Wings for a little bit. We'll see where they get. Shifting to the Tigers. The Detroit Tigers have been a lot of fun to watch lately. They're winning games. They're winning series. They've now won the series against Oakland, whatever we want to call them, the Athletics. They've won the series. They have the opportunity now to sweep them tonight. Hopefully the rain holds off and we can get that game going. But the Tigers are playing much better baseball. They are now 5.5 games out of the division lead.
4 games out in the loss column of the wild card.
This is substantial progress that we've seen over the last several weeks. Since June began, we had the numbers yesterday. They're the number one in the American League with the record in Major League Baseball with their ERA, home runs, and, you know, run differential, whatever it is. A lot of categories where they've been the best in baseball since June 1st.
Are you okay if I go through this real quick?
Yeah.
19-12 record, best in the AL. Plus 54 run differential since June 1st, best in the AL. Slugging percentage, second. Home runs, first. ERA, first. Opponents batting average, third. Guess where they are run differential in the American League? Second best run differential in the American League. Guess where they are?
That's actually not true.
Run differential, American League.
Oh, I'm sorry. Since June 1st.
So no, run differential.
They're
American.
Fourth.
Oh, I'm sorry. Sorry. Okay. Fourth in the American League. Top 10 in Major League Baseball, run differential, entire league. So they are really, really, really coming on right now. And what we are taking in is a reality that if they're able to play this way, 600 baseball, not 650, 600 baseball. If they're able to play 600 baseball the rest of the way, they're going to finish 83-79. Now, most years, 86 is the magic number. But if you've been paying attention to the American League wildcard race as I have, 83-79 might get it done this year. Can they do what they did in the month of June? Can they do that for July, August, and September? Because some of these numbers look like they are replicatable. I mean, this looks like this can be sustained.
What it comes down to is, in my mind, is it's a god-awful month of May that nearly killed this team.
Mm-hmm.
I think I think it's safe to say it nearly killed them. Clearly it hasn't, because they bounced back in June and now into July, where they're winning baseball games to the point where they've made all these inroads like you're talking about. Now they've got a plus 20 run differential, and now they've got this win-loss record. Now they're 8 games below 500, which normally sucks, but this was a team with 16 games below 500 at its peak, and that was a few weeks ago, right? They've made tremendous inroads. 7 out of their last 10 games they've won. They're doing a much better job, and they're getting it done with the starting pitching has been outstanding. But just putting things in perspective, like we were 6-22 in the month of May. So that's 28 games, 6-22. If you're just have a bad May, right? You're less than 500. So you're going, 12-16 in the month of May? That's a bad May. If that's what they had done, they'd be real close to 500 right now.
Well, you add 6 games to the win total, they would be 48-44.
So you'd be above 500. Thanks for doing the math, because when it gets to the compound stuff, I get like stuff. But this is the thing. The team is playing much better right now. They're playing as well as anybody is in baseball, maybe with the exception of the Dodgers. But I don't care about the National League until you get to the World Series.
Sure.
It doesn't matter. What is it in the American League? This team is playing awfully well. And they've got winning records against the good teams in the American League, with one exception, and that's Cleveland. They can't solve Cleveland, who they're 0-6 against. But it presents an amazing opportunity to turn things around here after the All-Star break, when you've got games against Cleveland, when you've got games against Chicago, the White Sox. They're 5.5 back in the division right now. Those are the two teams. And then Minnesota's only 2 games back of the division. So the 3 teams in front of them in the division, they got plenty of games, plenty of opportunities to leapfrog and really turn things around. If they're playing like they are now, this team by the trade deadline could be on top of the division. They could be.
Undoubtedly. What do you think it is about this team that is so multiple personality disorder? At the end of last year, they didn't have injuries. They scored 35 runs in the final 16 games, 2.2 runs a game. What's the explanation for that?
248-539-9797 is a telephone number. The mystery that is the Detroit Tigers, what is this team? What are they? Are they a team that 2 years ago in the second half of the season caught everything by storm and stormed into the postseason? Are they the team that sucked in the second half of last season but still got into the postseason and you know, they didn't lose until the last game in the series against Seattle? Are they the team that was the team we saw in May? Are they the team we've seen since then? Are they in between? What are they? We'll discuss it next year, 97.1. 8-539-9797 is the telephone number. Same number to text if you'd like to get through that way. Gator and Mark Ryan with you today. Doug will be back some point next week. We'll see when he gets over the fact that MJF lost the AEW championship last night to Kenny Omega. He said yesterday on the show, you'll know where he stands based on the outcome of that match. Well, now we know. Doug, massive MJF fan, which is strange, because I mean the personalities could not be more different than Doug Karsh and Maxwell Jacob Friedman. They could not be. And I never expected Doug to be an MJF fan, but that's where it is. So he's taking the rest of the weekend off. He said he's taking Monday off too, and we'll see where he is on Tuesday. I think personally he just wants to get past Champ and Chump on Monday, because he doesn't want to see all the chump votes coming in for MJF for losing the championship. More importantly, probably doesn't want to see all the champ votes coming in for Kenny Omega. It's obvious Doug can't stand the Canadian wrestler, the pride of Winnipeg, Manitoba. We can't stand it. So it is what it is. Tigers, however, this is fun to talk about now that the Tigers are playing great baseball. It's not just good baseball. They're playing great baseball. They're hitting on all cylinders here. The ball is flying out of the park. You have a situation in yesterday's game where Dylan Dingler gets hurt on a foul tip that goes off the bat and directly
sideways
onto his bare hand. Gets him right above, or I should say right below the fingers on his right hand.
You ever done that, by the way?
Been hit by a foul tip?
In that spot.
I've been hurt there, yeah, but not by a foul tip.
That is one of the most painful spots in the human body.
And it's, I mean, he's got there were, you could see the stitches of the baseball on the hand. Ugh. That's how hard he hit. But he stayed in the game, got a chance to throw a couple, make a couple throws to third base to make sure the hand was okay. And he's like, yeah, I'm good. Finishes the inning. And then you look in the dugout and you see Jake Rogers has a bat, and Jake Rogers is going to come into the game. And all Jake Rogers did was come up, hit a 2-run shot, then have a base hit, then draw a walk, and then make the last out in the game on a pop foul. He was able to catch it and end the game. And the Tigers are off and running now from a team that was 16 games below 500. Now they're 8 games below 500. They've made up a ton of ground. They are 5.5 back in the division, 4 games back of the wild card spot right now. They're starting to leapfrog teams.
Do you think they get back to 500?
Yeah, I do.
You do?
Because honestly, I think this is a team. Look, before the year began, we plant our flags and we say, where do you think they're going to be? Win total, right? And I think I said maybe 90, 91 wins. I said that's where I thought they were. I think they're a better than 500.
That's interesting.
Team.
I think I was 92. We're right there.
So this team's going to win the division. They're the best team in the division. They have the best roster in the division. And this is before everything, you know, went south. Before Parker Meadows got hurt. Before Baez got hurt. Before Gleyber Torres got hurt. Before we found out that Verlander was going to be out after, you know, he pitched the first weekend of the season. And we haven't seen him since. You know, we've had all these things happen. That Troy Melton was out for an extended period of time, and Casey Mize would go out. Tarek Skubal didn't pitch the month of May. You know, all these things were going on, and you know, through it all, I'm still like, well, when these guys get healthy, we could see something happen. I didn't expect them to be pumping the ball out of the ballpark like they had.
Sure.
With historic form in Tigers history. They have a month like they did where it hit, 49 home runs in the month of June.
And you're just beginning to forward think ever so slightly. All right? Because there's a lot of key decisions this team has to make. Just for a moment, playoff series. Melton the way he's going, Mize and Skubal. With the power numbers this team is producing, how do you feel about that? You like your odds, right? Melton, Mize, Skubal, this team, home runs, feeling pretty good?
Yeah. Well, it's more than just Melton, Mize, and Skubal.
Sure.
Yeah, and Kader Montero has been outstanding, a revelation this year, whether pitching as a starter or coming out of the bullpen. I was reluctant to say, let's see him out of the bullpen, and yet he's been great out of the bullpen.
Giving him exactly what they need. MVP of the pitching staff.
And for a league where starting pitching goes 6 innings now, to have a guy who can come in every third day and pitch 3 innings and close things out for you if need be, or pitch every couple days and give you 2 innings every couple days, I think it works out well. Now, it helps a lot that Jack Flaherty has been lights out his last 2 starts. That certainly helps. And the guy who's got to pick it up is Framber Valdez. And he's been more good than bad this year. But his bad is terrible. His good is great. But we've seen more bad than we expected to see. He's been more good than bad. But he has to be a guy that starts to get better. And he's got a track record of showing that he can be a lot better. The starting rotation is really good. The idea that they could get Jackson Joe back in the fold here in a few weeks, you know, after he makes a couple more rehab starts. He first rehab start throws 32 pitches and hits 100 miles an hour on the gun. Well, that's good. But we really haven't seen a ton of Jackson Joe at the major league level to say, oh, he's can't miss. I know he's got a great arm, but I don't know if he knows how to pitch at the major league level yet. Nobody knows that. Pitching's been great. And the hitting has been timely. It's the guys in the top half of the lineup that have been doing it. You know, Kerry Carpenter coming back and being healthy again, he can give the occasional home run that, like, okay, that's great. And as a platoon player hitting right-handed pitching, you like Kerry Carpenter at the plate. Riley Green has been an all-star, a legitimate all-star, for the third year in a row. Only Al Kaline has done that in the Tiger uniform to make 3 straight all-star appearances as an outfielder. He's been great this year. Again, and now the power stroke is showing up where he didn't have power to start the year, but he was hitting well, over 300. Now he's not hitting 300 anymore, but he's hitting the 280s.
But he's found that balance. He's found the balance between plate discipline and power, and he's getting the power back, and it's beautiful to see. And they had a lot of kinks to work out, and guess what? They're working them out, and they have enough time to do it. I've been at a place where I've said, if you're within 3 games of the final playoff spot on July 31st, I'm buying, not selling. They're now within 4 games on July 9th. You've got 3 weeks plus to go before you get to that point. If you have 2 full months to go in the season,
and trade line is August 3rd.
So right. Sure. So that would give you 3 days to make the moves before the trade deadline. But if you're within 3 games by the 31st, and now your goals are a lot more lofty than that, I mean, objects in mirror are closer than they appear. I've got to believe that this team is really thinking long and hard about changing course with what they thought they were going to be doing.
I have been of the belief for over a month now. I guess, well, really since, I'll say the beginning of June, we start seeing the team change things around. I was always of the belief they should trade Tarek Skubal. And particularly when they were losing, like there was no point in hanging on at Skubal, you knew where they're going to move him. But now that they started winning, I still think they should trade Tarek Skubal. But I think you can buy and sell at the same time. I think you can sell Tarek Skubal to get prospects. If let's say the Dodgers are the team you're dealing with, Dodgers have 1 million prospects, and you don't have to get their top prospect or even a number two prospect, but you can get several. I mean, I saw some reports that the Tigers aren't going to get four prospects from the Dodgers. I don't need four. Give me 2 of their top 5, and I'll be thrilled if you could land something like that. But that's a Skubal thing, right? You're going to get prospects for Skubal. But they have other pieces they could move to buy. Prospects that they have. And if I'm buying, I'm trying to buy a bat that hits left-handed pitching. Hopefully it's a right-handed bat, but really it's just about, can you hit lefties? And, you know, not be an anchor to this offense. And obviously they need bullpen help. And it's interesting. I just saw an article, MLB.com, was talking about a team that is not playing well right now. That at one point was well above 500, and now they're drifting in a direction that they don't want. It's like a sinking ship right now. And if they continue to do so, they have a commodity that would be highly sought after, and one that I think, if he becomes available on the trade market, and the stars align here, if that player becomes available and the Tigers continue to win and look like this is a team that can do some damage in the playoffs, but they still need a couple pieces, that the Tigers should be all in on. But you've got 3 weeks to prove that you're that team or to prove that you're not that team. But hopefully they're proving they are that team. We'll get to that coming up in 5 minutes. Also, we still haven't heard anything on Dylan Dingler and his health situation. We know yesterday that they took x-rays. They were negative.
We've been talking so much about Dylan Larkin. You wanted to say Dylan
right,
Larkin.
Right, yeah, right. But with Dingler, he's got the hand is swelling. Has the swelling gone down to the point where they don't have to put him on the injured list? We'll see. We haven't seen any moves that they've made, like bringing Tomas Nito up with a catcher, or Eduardo Valencia, who's a catcher at Toledo. Both of those guys, catchers. Do they need to bring somebody up, or is this something where, hey, swelling's gone down, Dingler's going to get a couple days off, then he's going to be fine? We'll see. We'll keep you updated on that as well. 248-539-9797. This is 97.1. So I mentioned a team at one point in time, I think they were 11 games above 500. And now they've found themselves back to being a 500 baseball team. And that's not a bad thing if you're in the American League, but they're not.
500 might win you with the World Series.
They're in the National League. The team is the San Diego Padres. They are light years out of the division because they play with the Dodgers. They are 14 games back. They're in second place, but they're 14 games back of the Dodgers for the division. They're not winning the division.
4.5 back of the final wild card and trending in the complete opposite direction of the Tigers.
They're trending downward. Tigers are trending upward. In fact, the Tigers are closer to a wild card spot than the Padres are, and the Padres are a 500 baseball team. So it led MLB.com to talk about, is it possible that they would end up moving closer Mason Miller if things continue to go in this direction? And it's interesting because last year they acquired Mason Miller at the trade deadline.
For the number one prospect in baseball.
Yes. By some was number one, by some was number three. That was Leo DeVries. They also added Henry Baez, Brandon Nett, and Daniel Nunez in exchange for Mason Miller and JP Spears. So they gave up a lot. They gave a ton of their prospects in the organization, their number one prospect in the organization, who is now, as it stands right now, I believe the number two prospect in all of baseball, to acquire Mason Miller. All he's done with San Diego has been spectacular. In the year and a half he's been, or basically it's a year's worth, right? He's pitched 58 games for the Padres. In the 58 games as a closer, his earned run average is 0.89.
Oof.
His whip, walks plus hits per innings pitch, is 0.77. He has 114 strikeouts in 61 innings pitched.
So on that one, if you were to look at starting pitchers, the leader this year is Dylan Cease, 13.55 Ks per nine innings. Mason Miller, 16.5 Ks per nine innings. Essentially, 2 Ks per inning. He's the most unhittable pitcher in baseball.
Yeah, that's what he's done this year. As a Padre, it's 16.8. It's even higher. Because you go, what he did last year, he was 17.4 per nine innings. Needless to say, Mason Miller is one hell of a pitcher. He's a hell of an arm to have out of the bullpen. I think bullpen is the Tigers' number one weakness. And in particular, a closer would be fantastic. Because Kenley Jansen hasn't gotten the job done. Will Vest has been... nowhere near what they expected.
I used to call him Will Bulletproof Vest. Bullets have been piercing.
Yeah. I mean, he's pitching 27 games this year. In the 27 games this year, nine of them he's given up at least one earned run. He hasn't been as bad as people think he's been because they see games where he's come in and he's blown a lead or blown a save, and then it gets people look at
have
that and
say
he's awful.
Have you seen the splits between when he plays in the eighth inning and ninth?
He's not
effective in the ninth inning. He's an abomination in the eighth inning.
So... he hasn't been the player that they were hoping he was going to be, and now he's injured as well. So, you know, they need to find a back-end bullpen help. If the Tigers keep winning and keep this train going in the right direction over the next 3 weeks leading into the trade deadline, and San Diego continues to fall off, if I'm the Padres, I'm 100% thinking about, I got to rebuild here. I need to get multiple players back for Mason Miller. And look, they gave up a ton to acquire him. Mason Miller has that trade value. He is, in terms of signability, he is signed through this year. However, he's arbitration eligible next year. His earliest free agent season is 2030. A team that were to acquire him, if he becomes available, and it's a giant if, would have him for not only the rest of this year, but they'd have him for the next three full seasons.
I see where you're going with this, Gator.
If the stars align and it makes sense for the Tigers to go all in, and everybody wants that all-in move, when it comes down to it, would the Tigers have the balls to go ahead and trade for Mason Miller, knowing that it's going to cost you Max Clark and others to acquire Mason Miller, based on what the Padres
will they
gave
have
up
the
last
balls?
Year?
No. Would I have the balls? Yeah.
So it's interesting you say they would not have
no.
the balls.
Absolutely not. They pearl clutch their top prospects. You know that as well as I do. They're not going to get rid of them because it probably would cost you, especially given that San Diego was loudly criticized for what they gave up to get him. I think it costs you Briseño and Clark.
That might be too much if you are doing the pearl clutching of the prospects. Maybe it's Max Clark and Max Anderson. I don't know. I don't know what it would be, but I think Max Clark has to be part of it if you're going to go in that direction. The reason I think it's different is because Mason Miller has 3 years left on the deal. This isn't a rental thing. This isn't talking about what do you give up for Eugenio Suarez.
And for
this is talking about Mason Miller.
For that reason, you're getting more than what the Tigers are being offered theoretically for Skubal. Right? Because you have player control with Miller for quite a bit longer.
I still think they get a lot for Skubal. But I think this has to play out over the next few weeks to see what San Diego does, if they are still going south or not. But if they're not playing baseball if they fall out of this race and they're eight games out of the wild card spot, which isn't, I don't think it's crazy to assume that could happen. By the time the trade deadline rolls around, we get to July 30th, July 31st. your line of demarcation there. If it's July 31st and the Padres are 8 games behind the wild card, they're probably considering making that move. And if the Tigers by July 31st are within a couple of games of the wild card, or maybe they are the wild card, and maybe they are the division leader at that point, who knows? They'd have to keep playing well over the next 21 games. It's a real possibility that they would have to target somebody like that. And it is a position that 100% would affect outcome of games in a positive way, would be a real difference maker if they could land a Mason Miller.
And is exactly the kind of move that historically every team from this city does not make. That well, is the top of the heap swing.
That they haven't made in a while. Mm-hmm. The Tigers are one of the teams that has made a move like this in the past, that they have gone after it when they went. But it's been a minute. It's been, you know, a dozen years since they traded for David Price. The fateful day at Comerica Park when Austin Jackson comes running in from the outfield because he got traded in the middle of the game. Really awkward situation. But they've traded to get guys like that in the past. It has happened, but it's been a minute. And it's also been a minute since this team was really competitive for it. But this would be a different type of move. 248-539-9797 is a telephone number. Maybe I'm talking crazy here, but I saw the article from MLB.com, and I'm like, okay, is Mason Miller really a possibility to be available? And yeah, I think he would be. But the big if is if San Diego continues to plummet and if the Tigers continue to rise.
And if they view themselves as kind of pressing a small reset button on their own, they could certainly recoup some of that for their farm system, a significant amount. So what is the offer that you would be okay with? You said Brisenio and Clark might be a little bit too rich. Anderson and Clark, that's number one and number four in your system.
Mm-hmm.
Is that's two top fives? By the way, none of the executives polled about Skubal involved any team losing two of their top fives. None. Okay, so that doesn't mean they couldn't ultimately get that. Desperate times calls for desperate measures. At the same token, what would you be personally willing to walk away from to get Miller here?
I'm just wildly interested. I mean, you're talking about a player, Mason Miller, that's unquestioned how good he is, how good he can be. He's 27 years old. He'll be 28 in August. You would have him for the next 3 years after this season. So, and because he's a closer and because he's under team control, he's not going to cost you $30 million a year. This is a guy who right now is making $4 million. And, you know, arbitration numbers will start to improve that salary. But again, it's not going to be a crazy final number like Skubal was this year for the team.
You tell me if I'm wrong. Most unhittable pitcher in baseball.
It's hard to disagree with that based on what he has been. I mean, literally, he has given up in 37 and two-thirds innings, 17 hits. 17 hits. In the 2 years he's been with the Padres, the two seasons he's been, parts of two seasons with the Padres, he has pitched 61 innings and given up 24 hits.
It's just insanity.
It's Mickey Mouse. These are numbers that Dennis Eckersley put up in the late 80s with the Oakland Athletics, when they were, you know, winning World Series and contending for World Series. It's Mickey Mouse numbers. It's crazy. Now, throughout his career, he hasn't been that. Not with Oakland. His ERA was starting as a rookie season with 3.78, dropped down to 2.49, and then was 3.76 with Oakland before he was traded last year. But it's a sub-1 ERA. Would I expect him to be the rest of the season? No. But I would expect him to be damned effective and a piece that, if you're the Tigers and you're winning, continue to win by the time you get to the trade deadline, and San Diego isn't, I'd make an offer. 100% I would make an offer. 248-539-9797. This is 97.1. Little tidbit from the NHL, something we're waiting on ahead of deadline of tomorrow, but the Anaheim Ducks have indeed matched the Leo Carlson offer sheet that will pay him $18 million a season for 5 years. So it's a wild contract.
Highest paid player in the NHL?
Yeah, is Leo Carlson.
Where do you rank him among the best players in the NHL?
I mean, he's nowhere near it.
Top 20?
I don't know if I'd go there. I mean, he's got potential.
That's the second most dangerous P word. It is. You see what I did there?
I see what you did there, yeah. Number two. Yep. I won't disagree with that. So, yeah, there you have it. So that happened. And that's – I don't like this offer sheet signing because I think it's crazy because, as you point, he's not a top 20 player in the league, and yet now he's being paid like he's the best. And it's a wild leap forward than what he should be making. But Philadelphia, they're the one that signed me the offer sheet in the first place. So Anaheim had to match or let him go and get four first round picks.
And what a bullet they just bought. I mean, it's the number one complaint teams have had against Jaylen Brown, right? They said the worst contract is when you have a top 25 player making top 10 money, that it then becomes an albatross for your team. What bullet did they just bite? Exactly that, right?
I mean, this is wild. You go, when you hear offer sheet, the first thing that comes to mind is Sergei Fedorov with the Red Wings after they won their second Stanley Cup, and Carolina had signed him to an offer sheet. The Red Wings had to match it and basically give him, I think it was $25 million up front. Whatever the contract was, I forget how it worked out, how much it was per year, but the big deal on that was it was $15 or $25 million that they had to give him as a signing bonus. And that kind of started the rift with the organization back then. But if you had asked back then, is Sergei Fedorov, where is he? He's a top 10 player in the league. You know, I mean, he was worth it. This is nothing but potential with Leo Carlson. And it's not like this is a 50 goal scorer. I mean, nice player early in his career. What I don't like about this is that now what does that mean for Jason Robertson as a restricted free agent? What does he look at that and say, okay, $18 million. I want $18 million. I'm the guy who's proven it. That guy hasn't proven anything. And it's not like I'm ancient. I'm about to turn 27 here in a couple of weeks.
Oh, and that's always the problem, right? That's what agents do. And smart teams say, hey, just because that team made a mistake does not mean we are going to make a mistake. Find a team that's going to be an idiot.
So we'll monitor that situation, but thought I'd pass that note along. As far as the Tigers, a lot of ticket texts coming in. The wild swings of winning and losing totally depends on the extent they are correctly controlling the strike zone as a pitcher and batters. In a lengthy period of time required to become consistent, that's from Ken in Lake Orion. But we're starting to see, we're past the 90-game mark here. I mean, it's pretty lengthy sample size. The Tigers are a 500 team with a bad bullpen and bottom four or five lineup that belongs in the minors. This recent surge does not allow an excuse to hang on to Scooble. His last start should be Sunday, Chris in Lake Orion. Okay, you got a deal worked out, Chris, that I don't know about?
Yeah, let us know what that is.
I mean,
who are you getting?
I don't have any problem trading Tarek Skubal if the team's, in a playoff hunt, because I think that they've got the starting pitching that can withstand that. And I know that I feel pretty strong they're not going to be able to re-sign him in the offseason.
Well, so on that note, can I give you what I think, what I've read would be available for Skubal?
Sure.
Can I share that with you?
Yeah.
Okay. Executive One said a top 100 prospect and a top 15 prospect from an organization. Top 15 prospect is nothing. So let's talk about this in Tigers terms. You would be getting Briseño, Jake Miller, and Jesus Pinto for Tarek Skubal. Does that wet your whistle? No. So let's go on to executive number two. Executive number two said you could get from an organization two of their top 10 prospects. So you'd be getting Lorenzo and Andrew Sears for Tarek Skubal.
Oh, you said two of their top 10.
Two of their top 10.
You're cherry picking which one they are.
So just so we understand, we're talking about players that we know. And then executive number three, this was the best offer. You'd get a top 50 prospect and a top 100 prospect. So from the Tigers, you'd get Bryce Rainer and Max Anderson. None of those, I could look at every single one of those offers and say, I'd rather the compensatory pick at the end of the first round. If it means I get to keep him for a playoff run?
Well, I would say no, because if I'm not going to have, if you don't think this team is built for the World Series and to challenge for that, or built for the ALCS, you just don't think they can match up, and you're not going to be able to re-sign him, trade him and get something.
But you are getting, you're getting a first round pick.
The first round, if it's a compensatory pick, it's not the first round picks that you feel very confident about would be like top 10 picks.
No, I understand
okay?
that.
But and the compensatory pick, and people will say, well, the Tigers got McGonagall, is that? yeah, they got extraordinarily lucky that he was there. They did their due diligence. They made sure that they got the deal done, and it works out for them for sure. And he looks brilliant. But when you start talking about, like, Bryce Rainer is where right now? Number 48 on the list or something like that in all of baseball?
Yeah, he is just inside the top 50 prospects in baseball.
Yeah, you know where he's going to be next year at this time?
Target is 2028, so he's going to be maybe Toledo?
Right, but I'm not Toledo next year. You'll be at Erie next year, but that's not what I was getting at. Where do you think he's going to rank in the top 100 prospects of baseball next year?
Okay, and what...
Coming off a season right now, because last night he went 5-for-5. Mm-hmm. With two singles, two doubles, a home run, six RBIs, and a stolen base, and now has his OPS above 900 at High A West Michigan.
He's killing it.
He's the real deal.
Can you get that for a Skubal rental when you consider that 66% of top 100 prospects bust? This is why I'm not enamored with any of these supposed offers of what executives would give up.
They don't sound great, but at the same time, the offers will increase and be better as long as you have more than one team that's willing to trade for Tarek Skubal. And I think you're going to find there will be several teams that will be, hey, we'd like to get involved. And one of those teams, let's say it's Milwaukee, if the Tigers were willing to eat some of Skubal's salary to facilitate that, because that's Milwaukee's big issue, is that they're not a big market team and they can't afford the kind of money, but they want the player for the run to the playoffs. Would they be willing to give up a nice package of players or prospects in return if the Tigers eat some of that salary? Yeah, they could. And then that forces the Dodgers to say, okay, hang on. We'll give you two of our top five.
But I think the only reason
their system is loaded with top 100 prospects. And then the Yankees are like, well, hang on a second. You know, we could talk about this or whomever it is. The point is, you need to have a bidding war for anything to happen. And I think that there will be.
I think the reason Skubal's still here is because the offers haven't reached that point yet. And so all I have to go by is what the executives have said. Well, will desperation set in and will that offer be there?
How often do you see a trade of this magnitude take place 3 weeks before the trade deadline? This is something you wait and wait and wait and wait, and then you make a deal happen within a few days of the trade deadline, if not on the day of the trade deadline.
You know who the team is, I think? You keep mentioning the Dodgers. I think it's Milwaukee.
They have
the number one prospect in baseball, Jesus Madé. They have Logan Henderson, a young starting pitcher. They've got Jet Williams, who's in a corner infielder in their minor league system. I think it's Milwaukee.
Yeah, they just promoted, was it Luis Lara, who just got promoted to the big league club, and they signed him immediately to a 7-year deal. It's a very palatable deal. But I don't think he'd be involved in a trade. But they do have. Some nice prospects to look at. That's why I brought up Milwaukee. The Dodgers, though, I think ultimately have the trump card because all these players that they have are blocked.
Skubal to the Dodgers would be Kevin Durant to the Warriors. It ruins baseball.
I don't care if it makes my team better.
But how many consecutive years are they going to win it all?
We'll see. They can do what they want. But look, Doug knows, and they wait. People that listen to the show know that I'm a big Mike Sirota fan, who's a double-A prospect with the Dodgers and is absolutely killing it. He's their number two prospect. He's moved up. He's also moved up significantly in the latest rankings. 248-539-9797. This is 97.1.